Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for September 14th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and sitting in for Jim Allen this week is the NPB tracker, Patrick Newman. Thanks a lot for joining us, buddy.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always a lot of fun.
Well, I'm sorry to drag you out of bed real early, right as the sun is rising, it looks like.
It's a lot of fun. I'm a morning person, you know.
Yeah, me too. I am now. All right, Jim is in New York, as he said on the show last week. He's on vacation, so Patrick's sitting in for him. And it's Saturday. It's Saturday on both sides of the Pacific right now. It's Saturday night here in Japan, and it's Saturday morning for Patrick. So got the Saturday games, and obviously we're releasing the show on Monday. So we have games on Monday, too, to talk about next week. So it's going to be a full week. But on this week's show, we've got an interview with Ernesto Mejia of the Lions. And that's the second time we're going to have him on the show this season. And we're going to talk about pennant races and a whole lot more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I went out to Cebu Prince Dome. We have all kinds of jokes about the dome, fingerprints, and Prince the musician, and all that stuff, or whatever Jim likes to say. I don't know. I can't keep up with his goofy jokes.
Hashtag hi.
I'm not even going to try.
That's a good effort, though. Good effort. But anyway, just to review... Ernesto joined the Lions in May last year after the season started, and he hit 34 home runs to tie teammate Takeya Okawari Nakamura for the PL lead. And then he was the first guy to come in the mid-season and become a home run king. And he got a big deal in the offseason, but he hasn't been as productive as we anticipated he would be this season until recently. He's been hitting a little bit better, but he had been hitting under 250 most of the first half of the season. He was still second on the team in RBIs. He homered in three straight games last month and tied a team record. This was August 31st. Had an 8 RBI game, and that tied a club record. So the day before I went out to the Dome, the team, I learned, had given him an extension for next year. So he's already signed up for next year, basically. He's got 25 home runs, including a big home run on Tuesday night after he got that extension that helped the Lions come back and beat Oryx, and that was a big positive for them, but they got shut out the day I went there. No jinx, though. We're not calling it a jinx. It's not a JBW jinx. Anyway, he was on the show. He was on show number 9 this year in April, and like I said, he was off to a slow start, but he was hitting 344 the past 3 weeks as of Friday's games. And you know, he had 3 home runs and 8 RBIs in September. He's still hitting pretty low. He's struggling against righties, but he's hitting 319 against lefties. And today, and this was Saturday in a day game, so I'm sure you didn't see it, Patrick, he absolutely crunched Tomoya Ichikawa, the Fighters catcher, in a home plate collision. It was pretty forceful, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I didn't see that highlight. I saw the highlight of him jumping into the stands for catching the foul ball pop up. But I didn't see all the highlights from that game yet.
Well, when you see this, you're going to feel for Ichikawa. But anyway, he's also a big hit on JBW, and so let's listen to what he had to say.
All right, Ernesto Mejia is the guest this week. Thank you very much for coming on with us. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much.
Second time this year. That's rare.
Yeah, the second time with you guys. Awesome. So, yeah, anytime you guys want me in, I'm in.
All right, well, I'm glad to hear that. How fun is it to be in the midst of this playoff race with Lotte? Is it fun, or does it make you nervous, or how's it feel?
No, it's actually real fun, yeah. Baseball is always fun. As long as you're doing good. When you're not doing too good, it's not too fun. But as a team, yeah, we enjoy this. We are together fighting. We all want to get there and make the playoff. You know, Chivalote is a good team. I'm glad last time we beat all three games at their home. So now we are in a little bit better position. But we still got 15 games to go, and we're gonna win as much as we can.
Okay, yeah, you did sweep them in that last series over the weekend, but why have they been so hard to get away from? How come they're so hard to shake?
Oh, I guess they are winning because they're winning. There's no other question. You know, there's no answer. They're winning a lot of games. We winning a lot of games. When we lost, they win and they get closer. They come up to third place and we get down. Stuff like that. So.
Do you worry about that on a daily basis? Do you think about where you guys are? Just
no, not really. I don't think no one does except for the bosses.
Right. That's their job.
Yeah, that's their job. Our job is concentrate on play hard baseball and do show our best performance during the game. So that's it.
Okay. Now they have more games left than you guys do. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a weird thing when you guys are sitting around on an off day. They're going to be playing and they have a chance to make up some ground. How is that dynamic for you guys?
Well, I guess we have to win, like I said before, a lot of games. We have 15 more games, so we have to end up in a really good position. So even if they win, at the worst case scenario, they you only tie us and instead of get the third place.
Right. Okay. Now Akiyama has been having a great season. Oh. He's chasing another record now. Last time I talked to you, he was chasing the consecutive hit record. So now he's chasing the Pacific League Ichiro Suzuki's hit record for a season, and then in NPB Matt Mertens' record. So what makes him such a good hitter?
Oh, he's a very aggressive hitter. He's got a great swing. He works hard every day. He plays hard every day. So it's hard to beat a guy like that. You know, he's a guy like him who work hard to compete. So, and when you're doing good, a lot of good things happen. You know, like everything comes together. Same when you're having a bad year, everything comes together where bad. So everything is on his way to succeed, finish strong, to have a great year. I hope he breaks every record he can. So, yeah, he's a great teammate too.
Is it his swing or is it pitch selection or what makes him such a good contact hitter?
Yeah, both. He got a great swing, inside out swing. He hit the ball over the other side. He don't try to do too much. He makes sure he he swings straight. So he's really good at it. It's really good selecting, so that's why he's so good.
Now, how did you feel? Because I remember talking to you when he had that hitting streak going, and just about the hit streak, but how did you feel playing in those games when he got to like 27, 28, around that area?
Oh, it feels nice, you know. It, for us, it's just another day, but we feel really proud of having such a talented player, such a talented hitter in the same team, so... it's an honor. It's an honor playing with him, and like I said, you know, I hope he keep doing well like he's been doing, and he end up with the batting title.
Now he's chasing the Pacific League record is Ichiro Suzuki's, and he's such a different hitter from Ichiro because he doesn't have the same kind of speed and he doesn't get as many infield hits. But can you see him breaking that record? You said you hope he gets as many records as he can, but is it going to be difficult for him going down the stretch to get that?
No, he already showed nothing is difficult for him. Whenever you expect, like whenever you think he can't get another hit, he get another hit right away. So, hey, I'm pretty sure he can break it. He only needs to keep healthy. He keep himself healthy. He will break any record.
All right, let's talk about you now. It seems like since August or after sometime during the summer, you started to get hot with the weather. Mm-hmm. What's changed for you?
Oh, my God. It's been a long season, you know, a lot of trouble for me, not hitting well. But I think my mentality, it will never change. You know, I work hard, I compete, and I will never give up. I've been feeling great physically long time ago, but I couldn't mix that with my swing. But now I'm doing it, so I think that's the result of all year working hard, and now I'm seeing the ball better. I hope to end up really strong these 15 games. I'm going to do my best to end up with good numbers.
Now, it seems like the last 2 weeks you've been doing better at getting on base. Is that because you're playing in the field as well? Do you like doing that as opposed to DHing?
No, yeah, I don't DH too much. Right. But sometimes they give me days off as a DH. But I think because it's the same answer as I did last time. I'm seeing the ball better, I'm feeling better, so I'm not swinging too many times during the at bat, unless it's my pitch I'm looking for. So because I'm seeing the ball better, of course when they throw balls I don't swing, so I get more walks now and getting more base and getting more hits. So that's why the on base percent is increasing.
All right, have you noticed a big difference in the way they're pitching you from the beginning of the season to like the last month or so?
Yeah, I mean, because I wasn't hitting too much, now they feel more comfortable throwing the ball around the plate, and then now they paying. So I hope they keep throwing the ball around the plate so I can, and I hope I can hit it too. So I can help the team to win.
All right, well, we think you guys have a lot of talent. We expect you to win. So what's your prediction?
My predictions are we're going to get the third place and make the playoffs. Yeah.
All right, well, good luck.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot, man.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Good luck.
All right, well, thank you very much, Ernesto. I always like talking to you. I remember I gave him, the first time I met him, he gave me like this real quick 2-minute chat because I met him just before the game started. And I don't think he was supposed to be talking to me back behind the mirror room, but he was. So really great guy. I always enjoy talking to him. So what did you take away from that interview?
Baseball is always fun. I love it.
Except when you're not doing too well.
But he did qualify that by saying when you're doing good. But I think he meant it. It really sounded genuine. And I think he does come across as a guy who really enjoys what he does and plays and enjoys playing baseball. So that jumped out at me. Secondly, the stuff about Akiyama, I have some thoughts on him. You know, not super insightful, but yeah, it just comes down to he's really good. And then lastly, I do think that something clicked with him, whether it was in July or August, probably in August, where over June and July, he was really slumping and he was sharing time at first base and DH with Wakia, not really getting out of his slump. And then at some point in August, they gave him the job and they stuck with him and said, you're starting at first base every day. And then we started to see something pick up with him. So starting to see better pitches and hit with more power and draw walks and just perform better overall.
Right. And that was your question. I actually asked Patrick if he had some questions to ask, and he sent in a few questions, and I pretty much butchered them and changed them around and everything, but I think we had the gist there. And basically the specific question you wanted to know about was, does he feel more comfortable DHing or playing in the field? He kind of just touched upon it before I got to that question, and so I decided to ask it a different way. That's what happened on that one. But
yeah, I think he answered. I think he doesn't like to DH. And that's good. I think a lot of guys hit better when they play in the field, so I think there's something to that. He was hitting, I think, 205 or 206 on August 11th when he got the first base job back full time. And he's hitting about 235 now, and it still doesn't sound like a great batting average, but he has performed a lot better. And then you pointed out that he's gone on a hot streak. So
Right. Maybe
it's just something about later in the season, pitchers are tired. I was watching some video of him and the balls that he really drives, he does a good job staying back on and waiting for the off-speed pitch to come from him. That was the first thing that I saw. Mm-hmm. There was a home run he hit against Lotte from, I think, the series that they swept last week.
Right.
And he just did a really nice job staying back on it and taking it back up the middle, and it happened to go out the park. So, you know, he's heating up, and that's obviously great for him, and it's great for Cebu.
Yeah, I just have always seen him chase a lot of pitches. So when he mentioned the fact that Akiyama is very disciplined and he doesn't swing at a lot of pitches outside the zone, you know, my initial thought was, yeah, well, how come the rest of the team isn't doing that, including you? I mean, what's going on? Why are you guys chasing so many pitches? And you know, I went and looked it up. They have more than 1,000 strikeouts as a team. That's, nobody else in Japan, none of the other 11 teams, has that many. And they're at least 150 higher than anybody else, which is amazing because remember last year they set the all-time record for strikeouts as a team in a season. So they're not getting any better.
Well, they have a lot of power hitters. You know, they've got Okawari Kun strikes out 200 times a year or something. So right there,
the team in strikeouts.
Yeah, right there. Yeah, I mean, he makes up for it with all the other things he does. Akiyama, for as great as he is, has struck out 72 times out of 550 at bats. He's walked 52 times, so he's obviously having a phenomenal year. But his strikeout rate is right in line where he is for his career. So I don't really know that he's being more selective in his pitches. I think he looks a lot more aggressive, and he's swinging a lot harder this year than I've seen. So, you know, this is a team with a good offense. They generate a lot of runs. That's really what it comes down to. They got some power, but with that comes some striking out.
I understand that, but there's guys like, and you talked about it. I mean, Akiyama's got this batting average of 360, so I'll take whatever strikeouts come with that. I think he hit home run number 14 tonight, so that's not a great deal, but... You know, that's good for a center fielder who really hadn't displayed a lot of power anyway. But the guy who, I mean, other than you talked about Okawari-kun having done a lot of damage with the strikeouts that he brings, 37 home runs and 120 RBIs. He's played 129 games. He's got 120 RBIs. How can this guy not get MVP votes? This is going to be amazing. Anyway,
well, that's what happens when you got a guy hitting 360 in front of you.
Well, that's what happens when there's another guy on another team that's finishing first. That's who's hitting 360 in front of you. But anyway, that's a different story for another day. You know, Okawari-kun's 156 strikeouts through Saturday. That's a lot, but like I said, he's got the damage to go with it. The guy who really bothers me. And he started out so well, and he's just kind of been average since that great start, is Tomoyo Mori. And yes, I had picked him early on in the season as one of the guys I want to really watch this year, but I'm kind of disappointed the last, I don't know, 6 to 8 weeks. And he has 132 strikeouts in 435 at-bats. So I'm not really pleased with that number because he doesn't have nearly the production. He's got fewer than half the home runs and right about half the RBIs. And, of course, 125 games versus 129 games, so he's a few games back, but doesn't have that much production to go along with all those strikeouts. So I think, you know, when you say they've got a lot of power hitters and it's probably okay, I'm thinking... Well, you know, you don't need everybody to hit a home run. You just need a few.
Well, they're second in the league in runs scored, so they have that going for them. The guy that bothers me is not Mori. Mori is 19 years old, and I don't think I've seen a 19-year-old hit like him, with the possible exception of Ohtani last year, in the 16 years that I've been watching Japanese baseball. And the guy that bothers me is Asamura. Asamura, 121 strikeouts in 575 plate appearances, 494 at bats. You know, he just hasn't progressed. He looked like a real good player, and really going as far back as 2011 and in 2013, I thought he really had a nice breakout and he was going to be a real core player for them. But you know, this year has just been kind of uninspiring. 275, 11 home runs, 16 doubles. You know, 383 slugging. That's not what you want from a middle order guy. Mori is hitting, you know, 15 home runs, 29 doubles, slugging 460. You know, the strikeouts are you know, an artifact of his youth. But Asamura is just not making progress, or he hasn't this year. But maybe he'll bounce back next year.
Yeah, but remember, I mean, he was an outfielder. They moved him to short for a while. He was a second baseman. I mean, he was playing first. I mean, they didn't really know what to do with him. And I think when you talk about Mejia and they say, hey, this position is yours, go out there every day. They didn't do that at times for Asamura, and I'm not surprised. And I'm not talking about this year because they moved him all over the place throughout his career. This year, you know, he's pretty much been the second baseman. And, I mean, I like him there. I don't think he's great there, but that's the spot where they can use him, I think, the most. Well, he definitely should not be at short. And, you know, he could be in the outfield, but I think they have a bunch of outfielders. They're not great, but they have them. So I think, you know, he's fine where he is. He's made a few good plays. He's pretty much average on the defensive side. So I think he's still trying to find himself. I'm not so much worried about him or his production. I'd rather take a look at his situational batting, because there are some times where I think he's doing a really good job in moving guys over or just trying to hit based on what the situation is. And there's sometimes where he just strikes out because it looks like he's trying to do too much at the plate. So, yeah, okay. I can see that, though. The other thing that was interesting to me in the chat was the moment he said about Chivalote. He said, "They win." And I thought, you know what? You know, he had already said that they're a good team prior to that in the interview. So I think since he already said that, he already complimented them, I think that was the kind of the shot at, hey, man, I don't know how they're doing it, but they win. and he's right. You know, we look around. I mean, I've been saying for so long that they're overachieving, and I know a lot of people are probably writing them off because as we speak, they're three games out of that spot, that third spot. But I'm not writing them off, and I don't consider them dead until you show me the corpse, you know. Rumors of their demise might be greatly exaggerated, you know, that situation. So
yeah, so they're a streaky team. You know, they're a team that'll rattle off a good win streak, and then they're a team that'll go into a slump. And, well, you know, they don't have a lot of power apart from Despaigne. They don't have a lot of guys who walk. They have a lot of guys who make contact and hit for average.
Yeah, I mean, they're good at attacking the pitches in the strike zone, and they're good at making contact, and they put the ball in play, and they make you make plays on the defensive side. But, you know, we can talk about them later. I'm just thinking that, you know, he said they're a good team already. He said they know how to win. So I go back to him talking about Akiyama and swinging at strikes, and I think if the Lions, and they've done a good job. They had that three-game series that they swept at the Q last weekend, and that was big for them. But that's not the end, and even though they won on Saturday, that's not the end. And they can beat them on Sunday, and I still think that's not the end, because they're going to be sitting on their butts while Lotte is out there playing games. And as long as you're playing games, I don't care basically who you're playing. You have a chance to win them, obviously, and that can change, that can turn the table. So, you know, pitch recognition, pitch selection, I think if the Lions can solve those problems, I can look toward the playoffs and say, okay, well, I think this team can do some damage in the playoffs. But until they do that, because their rotation isn't that outstanding, it's not going to carry them in the postseason. They're going to have to figure out a way to get more guys on base, get them over, and put more pressure on the defense to get those guys home. And if they do that, I can see them advancing in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, they beat Nippon Ham 9-8. Last night, so they have more games like that. They have a chance.
Yep, and you know, I think on paper they have a better pitching staff, you know, top to bottom. This dramatic game that they won on Saturday, Okawari-kun hits a you know, Asamura, your guy you're worried about, he drew a walk, and this was in the 11th inning, and then Okawari-kun ends it with a walk-off home run. I did a little poll on Twitter and on the Facebook page, and I asked people who they thought was going to win that third place spot. And this was during the week, and almost all the people came back saying, you know, Seibu's got it, like it's a done deal. And I kind of shook my head. I said, okay, all right. And as Ernesto told us, the Marines know how to win. So, you know, again, no matter how gloomy it looks to me, I'm just not going to count them out. And here's the other thing. You know, we could have projected better results for the pitching staff for Seibu. I think Kikuchi could have won more games this year. I think Tomomi Takahashi's breakdown in the second half, you know, his blow-up, helped contribute to that 13-game skid. because it wouldn't have been as long, because he blew a couple three saves during that streak. So I would venture to say they've met expectations in terms of what they've done on the mound. And their defense has been spotty, but if they just strike out too much and they don't advance runners, and you know, you talked about how well they're scoring runs, they could score a lot more if they did some simple things, you know, put the ball in play more. So I don't know, it's strange.
Yeah, They probably could score more if they did the little things and got more guys on base at the top of the order. But we'll see. This is why it's fun. This is why the playoff system is good. A couple of years ago, maybe 10 years ago, we wouldn't be talking about this race. We would just be sort of staring in awe at SoftBank walking away with the pennant. And the playoff system makes the battle for third interesting. So it's good that we have this.
Right. And talking about the PL race now, the Hawks are just ridiculous. You know, it's crazy how well they're doing. I saw something on Twitter where somebody was saying it's like the eighth best season in Japanese baseball history if you count all the other teams that were more than 40 games over 500. But I would venture to say it's one of the best ever, because this was a long time ago. The competition wasn't as good. And I think if Jim were here, he'd say, hey, you know, this is in the era, you know, we're talking teams back in the 50s when they were just starting out in the two league system and all that stuff. So, you know, I think this could be one of the best ever, if not the best ever season by a team, because of all the competition in the Pacific League, the fact that you have to go and play the Central League and Interleague. So you're playing against guys you're not usually prepared to play. And, man, this is something that they're doing. But the Lions and, I mean, the Fighters obviously can't – they're having a little bit of trouble at the moment. They've tripped up a little bit. But the game difference everywhere between first and second, between second and third is so – the gap is so big that we're not really going to see any changes in the standings per se. I just think it's gonna make the playoffs a little interesting when, you know, if it is the Lions and the Fighters – and they're playing. They just played each other today on Sunday. So that big comeback where Okawari couldn't hit the home run was against the Fighters. Going to make stuff interesting in the playoffs, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the gaps are huge. You have SoftBank leading the league by 14 and a half games, and then Seibu another 7.5 games behind Nippon Ham, and then on the from. Lotte is close at 3 games back, but then from there, from 4th to 5th, you have another 7.5 games. So it's very widely disparate there. You know, you talk about how Seibu could score more runs. I think actually SoftBank could score more runs, because they have this kind of murderer's row from batters 3 to 7 with Yanagita and Uchikawa and Lee and Matsuda. But the guys they hit first and second tend to be kind of speedy, low on base guys. I'm seeing Shuhei Fukuda, for example, batting first and second sometimes, and Akashi. And they have Akira Nakamura hitting seventh or eighth all the time. And he's getting on base, like, I think his on base percentage is 389 or something like that. And these other guys are right around 300. So if you have this on base guy getting on base before your power hitters come up, you're going to score even more. So a little bit of a mismanagement, I think, by Kudo there. So they could be even more scary if they just did things properly, I would say.
Well, one of the reasons – I'm sorry to cut you off. One of the reasons I said the Lions could be scoring more runs is that they've got 1,146 hits as a team. SoftBank has 1,116. So they have 40 more hits. I think this is as of Saturday. So they have 40 more hits, and they have more walks by just a couple. So they're getting more guys on base and doing it at a higher rate than the SoftBank Hawks, which is saying a lot to me. But you strike out so doggone much, you're not advancing them, and you're not getting them home. And that's why I said that. They've even had 57 guys hit by pitch, and the only other team that has more than that is the Oryx Buffaloes with 59. And SoftBank has only had 42. So that's 15 more guys on base just from standing too close to the plate.
They have played 7 more games than SoftBank, so that balances out a little bit. But yeah, I don't disagree with you. I just think SoftBank also, if the lineup was better ordered to have the on base guys going before the power guys, you would get more offensive production. Either way, they're leading the Pacific in runs scored, and I haven't compared with the Central, but I'm sure they're leading that too.
Yeah,
a huge margin there. So yeah, they're all set. And honestly, I can't see Nippon Ham or Seibu really posing that much of a threat in the playoffs to them. Nippon Ham in particular has played terrible against SoftBank the last 2 months or so. Cebu, you know, may catch lightning in bottle and make it interesting, but really I think SoftBank is the heavy favorite in coming out of the Pacific.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talked about it last week and we've talked about it in past years. The Hawks have had their troubles in the playoffs, so they're going to have to do it, and Hokuto's going to have to prove they can get it done in the postseason. So let's talk about the Central League race too now. It's tighter than ever. Before we started taping, I think I said it's heading in the direction of going down to the very last pitch, deciding the three top spots in the Central League. That's the way we're headed. We had a tie between the Carp and the Tigers on Saturday. They played 12 innings. The Giants came back and beat the Bay Stars. The Dragons beat the Swallows at home in a one-run game. This thing is just tighter than anything. And again, that little poll that I did on Twitter and on Facebook, a lot of people picked Yakult to win the Central League and pull away. Some people picked the Giants, but nobody picked the Hanshin Tigers. And at the time that I did the poll, they were the top team. I think they were up by a game and a half or two games even when I started doing the poll. So nobody really seems to have faith in the Hanshin Tigers. Don't you have some kind of affiliation or some kind of attachment to the Hanshin Tigers? Was that you, or was it some other guy who looked like you and lived in your house?
it's a clone, I suppose.
Doppelganger. Shoot that guy.
Well, that was good. No, he's nice. Leave him alone.
Masquerading as you.
Yeah. Well, the version of me that lived in Osaka from 2000 to 2003 was a pretty big Hanshin fan. The version of me, you know, that's been writing about baseball since 2008 is a bit more neutral, I would say.
I bet you say that to all the guys.
No, it's true. You know, it's actually something I wanted to write about, how it's kind of made it less fun, actually, to cheer for a team. But what I've kind of developed is kind of more of an appreciation for players that I like, that, you know, wherever they play.
Okay, all right. Blah, 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 blah. Why are your team sucking?
Hashtag high heat.
Sucking them first.
They had a bad
week. They ran into a Carp team that's finally playing like they should.
You know, I was thinking about that. I thought they were winning like they should be. I still don't think they're playing like they should be. But at least they were winning games.
Yeah, I don't get to see as many Central League games because they're not available online, so it's hard for me to really say for sure. But the Carp were my pick to win the Central from the start, and I'm sticking to it. I'm not deviating from that. Even though they're in fourth, I still think that they've got it in them to make a run. You know, on talent, I think they're the best team overall, you know, 1-28. They're I think 5-3-2 in September. The games they've lost that they haven't been close, basically five. I think there was a 6-0 and a 5-1. But aside from that, they've been more competitive in the last couple weeks. And you know, on talent, I still think they have the best roster of the four teams that are in contention.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, and they have a bunch of games against Hanshin too. So, which they're winning, and one of them got rained out, so they'll make that one up too. So, you know, they have a chance to kind of not only help their own cause, but also hurt Hanshin, and that's exactly what they've been doing. And Hiroshima, really, the key guy in the whole pennant race probably has been Tomoya Yagi from Chunichi.
Hashtag high heat.
Because
he's been killing them.
Yes, he's been destroying them. He's something like 6-1 or something, 6-0 against them.
Well,
and,
maybe,
you know,
lifetime, but I think this year he was at least 3-0, and his ERA was like 0 until the other day.
Yeah,
touched him. Yeah.
Yeah. So he, I think he's had 6 games against the Carp, and until the game this week, he had shut them down in all of them, and he's been terrible against everyone else. So, you know, without him, it would be an even tighter race. I don't think Hiroshima beating him would be enough to separate themselves from the pack.
Yeah.
But it would be they would be tied for first with Yakult and Hanshin. So, you know, their inability to win against Chunichi and DeNA has really hurt them because they've been pretty good over against everybody else overall.
Yep. Now you said the Carp have after Saturday's games they still had 5 games to play against the Tigers going down the stretch, and that's the most they play against any other team. So if the Tigers are going to be beating the other teams. It's so fun because, like I said, I swear this thing is going to go down to the last pitch. And all these teams keep beating each other. They just exchange beatings, you know, whether it's 2 out of 3. Sometimes there's a sweep, but nobody can pull away. No one's got the power or the pitching to pull away. So we're just going to see this tight race and these tight games, just like we saw today. I think it's just hard to take your eyes off of any of them. But some of the people picked the Giants, and I've been saying all season that I really believe that they're good and they know how to win. And when we talked to Miles Michaelis, he said, "Hey, it's a culture of winning. It's an organizational DNA that is all about winning." And that's what they preach. That's what they go out and they meet. They have endless meetings. And they remind and reinforce the idea of winning and competing and doing your job and all that stuff. It's like a Patriots way almost. But you know, they know how to win, so I'm not going to count them out either. This is another team not unlike the Lotte Marines in that you think you've got them dead. You think you've got them out, and they find a way to come back. So I'm not going to, you know, if the Carp really are going to come back and crawl and bite and claw back into this playoff picture, they're going to have to do some of that work, not only against Hanshin. They're going to have to do some against the Giants. And I think they have 4 games, I think. Let me check. They have 2 games against the Giants to play.
Yeah, and they're Hiroshima is 14-9 overall this year against the Giants. So for whatever reason, they've matched up pretty well with that group. Yeah, Yomiuri.
Well, walk-off sacrifice infield flies can do that for you.
I forgot about that. Over the bigger picture, though, the Giants have kind of struggled at the plate for most of the year. Sakamoto has been okay, but you know Abe is clearly on the decline phase of his career.
Yeah, but he can still bite you on any swing. You know,
He can still take one out, but he's not that year in year out MVP candidate that we saw just like 2 years ago. So, you know, he's not the threat he used to be. Murata has been nowhere this year. Chono has declined very quickly. You know, one guy I really like is Leslie Anderson, and I think he's had some injury problems or something this year. You know, the lineup has been a bit uninspiring, and the pitching, on the other hand, has been really good. Michaelis has been great. Parade has been really good. Sugano is God forbid they win the title, because then Sugano will be the MVP again. But
Sugano gets it over Michaelis, then I'm gonna have more sickness than I would normally have. But if they do win, it's really gonna be interesting to watch the Japanese press try to pick an MVP this year too. But you know, depending on who wins, if it's Yakult, we all know who it's going to be. So that's not a problem.
I don't know. I think it should be Yamada, regardless of who wins.
We know what we're looking at, but they don't know what they're looking at. So, and on Wednesday when I was out at Cebu Prince Dome, I was talking to some reporters, and I said, you know, I just see you idiot. I didn't say idiots, of course. I see you guys picking somebody other than Yamada, and I'd like to hear you defended other than to say that the team, you know, and then they like, well, yeah, you got to pick somebody from the first place team, and so we got to own it. So anyway, hopefully it'll be the last pitch of the season. Actually, it'll probably be the last weekend of the season that these positions are decided, because I think the very last day of the season that we have Central League action is October 2nd, and the Dragons are playing, probably with Tomoya Yagi starting, are playing the Carp at Mazda Stadium, and the Giants are playing the Bay Stars at Yokohama Stadium. So it probably won't be the last pitch, but it could be. It could be. But we'll see. It might be that the day before, when we have all three teams in action on Thursday, October 1st. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
There's more rainouts coming, so it may not end right on October 2nd. So we'll just have to see. Anyway, it's a great race, so we're very lucky as fans for that.
All right. So making a four-seam transition, I want to talk about the comeback teams of NPB. And I didn't send you the numbers. I just sent you this note, and I'm sure it was really cryptic, and you're like staring at it and doing the, you know, side to side with your head, thinking, what the heck is this guy doing? But I saw a note on Twitter, one of the sites that I follow sent out as of Wednesday, which teams had the best records or the best winning percentage when they were trailing after 6 innings. So offhand, and I know you didn't do any research because it's really hard to do, who would you think has the best record in the Central League when trailing after six innings?
I'm going to go Yakult.
You are correct. They're 9-48, and that's an awful record. The winning percentage is 158. This is through Wednesday.
And that's the best.
And that's the best. So. And next is the Bay Stars at 8-49, then the Giants, then the Tigers, then the Carp, who might as well be the worst because they're right basically at 104 winning percentage, just above Chunichi's 0.098 winning percentage. What about in the Pacific League? Who do you think it is there?
In the Pacific League, well, the obvious choice is SoftBank because they they win every other way. So the only trouble is that they probably haven't been trailing too much after six. I'm still going SoftBank.
You are correct. They're 12-31. So, yeah, they haven't been trailing that much after six innings. But when they do, they have a 279 winning percentage. So they're still doing pretty well. And then
yes, comparatively, that's phenomenal. Yeah.
Then comes the Fighters. They're 7-41, or they were 7-41. And actually, the Eagles have more wins, but they've been trailing more. So they're 8-54. And then the Marines don't come back very much, and the Buffaloes don't come back very much. But then the Lions, after this stat came out, came back and won two games because they were 3-47. So they've upped that because they've added two wins while trailing after six innings. In fact, they were trailing all day on Saturday. They got behind early and had to fight their way back. So, yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting, and it makes sense. I like the way you decipher and work your way through the problem.
It's a software engineering interview question. So you make a guess based on limited information and explain your thought process, and that's how you hire.
Yeah, well, you maneuvered your way through that excellently. You're hired. You got the job.
Well, we'll have to see what you're offering.
Hey, buddy. I'm offering you a job here. All right, let's talk about Rick Vandenhurk of the Hawks. Now, he has a winning streak, and he's the first foreign pitcher to win this many games consecutively to start his career in Japan since Gene Baki, who had won 9 consecutive games in 1964, and a Taiwanese pitcher named Kaku Taigen. And Vandenhurk's streak is up to 8 in a row. Now, like I said last time, I don't really consider it from the start of the season, but because he wasn't up on the first team at the start of the season, but you know, basically I get the picture. He's doing really well. I said with Jim before, I don't think he's going to get the ball in game one of their playoff series, but I think he's going to get it fairly early, and he's going to get it for a long time, and I think he's going to do a lot of good things with it. What were your thoughts on his streak here?
Yeah, so I have a little story about Vandenhurk. So I'd seen him in the majors several times in his career with the Marlins and the Orioles. And, you know, real good fastball, not a lot of command at that point in his career. And I don't think he had even a single breaking pitch that was worth anything back then. And, you know, I was used to seeing guys like Colby Lewis and Mark Kroon and those types, you know, real good arm, not a lot of command, come over to Japan and sort of learn how to pitch and get better at commanding their stuff. So he was kind of on my list from, I think, 2012 onward. I thought I wrote about him as a guy who should come over, but I checked back on mpbtracker.com and I couldn't find anything, so obviously I didn't.
But you thought about it, see? You thought about writing that article and you wrote it in your mind.
Yeah, well, I never had time, I guess.
I've written a lot of articles in my mind.
Yeah, I've got a whole backlog of those.
I think I have a book up here somewhere too. But
yeah, me too. We should collaborate together.
to never publish a book.
Yes, co-author a book we never write. But I used to do this. I mean, I called out Matt Merton and a bunch of other guys as guys that should come over and try playing in Japan. And it's not hard. There's a certain profile really works. But Vandenberg was one of those guys. And I wish that I had written that, because then I could take some credit for for predicting that. But you know, I think his fastball, he still doesn't have great command. You know, if you look, he kind of goes for the top half of the strike zone or the bottom half, and you know, he'll throw real hard and it'll go over the plate some portion of the time. And the thing that I was watching a bunch of video of him the last couple of days. And the thing that jumped out at me is seems like he has a lot more movement on his two-seam fastball than I remember. Mm-hmm. And just looks like a really, really good pitch without a lot of command. He reminds me of Kyuji Fujikawa a little bit in that sense. Mm-hmm. And
get it close enough and then throw a forkball.
Yeah. Well, he's not really a fork, but he's got kind of a power curve that it's not as biting as Kyuji's was. And Kyuji had a lot of vertical movement on his fastball, and Rick has a lot of horizontal movement on his fastball. So it's a little different in that sense, but it's about as hard and it's about as deceptive, and he repeats his mechanics really well. And it's just great to see a guy like that having some success at a high level.
Okay. Talking about another guy who has had some success is Dennis Sarfate, same team, the Hawks. The closer extended his MPB record of consecutive innings with at least one strikeout, and he bumped that up to 42 the other day. And it was dramatic because he came on in the ninth inning in a game that they were winning over the Fighters, and he was only going to – there were already two outs. So if he was going to extend this record, he had to strike out the guy he faced to get the out. And he did. He fanned Yo Dai Kong looking to end the game, and that got him up to 42, and it was really awesome. And I'm happy for him, because this is a guy I've really liked since the first time I saw him throw a ball with Hiroshima way back when. I've talked to Jim about it. Jim was not impressed with him, or said, you know, he wasn't as impressed as I was with Dennis. But I've liked him everywhere he has gone, and it seems like we keep talking about SoftBank Hawks and pitchers that the club acquires and those guys really doing well. And here's another example.
Yeah, well, Dennis is another guy with a great fastball. And, you know, the scout from the Hiroshima Carp, Eric Schulstrom, really does a really great job in particularly finding pitchers that will do well in Japan. And Sarfate is another one of his success stories. And, you know, he's bounced around a bit, but he's got a great fastball. He gets a lot of swinging strikes. It was maybe a little bit fortunate that he got to face Yo, because Yo is another one of those guys who strikes out a lot. Mm-hmm. But you got to give him a lot of credit. He's got great stuff, and he really attacks, and he's probably having the best year of his career at this point. So,
and you say yeah. Bounced around. I say that the teams didn't want to pay him.
Well,
we know that Hiroshima is not going to pay out a lot of money, and I think basically Seibu tried to lowball him, and he ended up going where there was more money, and why not? You know, this is a limited time to get to do that.
Fair play, yeah. It's and he gets to win too. He'd probably be setting a save record if SoftBank didn't blow teams out so much. Yeah, well, Hiroshima, you know, yeah, they operate on a budget, and they have an ability to always find new pitchers from AAA. So, you know, when he was struggling, Cam Michelio was coming up and contributing for them. So I can't really fault Hiroshima. It's just how they roll.
Yeah, I understand it. I mean, you said bounced around, and I'm thinking, you know, you make it sound like he was unwanted, and I think it was that they didn't want to dole out the money that he was going to command, not demand, but command, because I think the market was good for him. So
yeah, well, he deserves it. He's a big part of that team's success. So my congratulations to him and Vandenberg too.
Yep. All right, let's go to fielding questions. First question is from Glenn in Tokyo, our buddy. He says, quick question. I know this is more of a trendy NFL and college football thing, but I wondered how you felt about strength of remaining schedule and how that might affect the playoff runs for those still vying for a playoff spot in both leagues. Meaning, Chiba has 9 games of its final 20 as of 9/11 against the Fighters and Hawks and must really have angered the schedule gods. Whereas the Lions might skate to victory with 8 games left against the Eagles and Buffaloes combined. So I'm going to let you take this one first. What's your take on that question?
Well, Lotte, you know, just playing in the same league as SoftBank is bad enough.
Right.
So, yeah, they, you know, we talked a little bit about Lotte versus Cebu, and Lotte has, I think, six games more than Cebu remaining on the schedule. But six of those games are with SoftBank. So I think that kind of nullifies the advantage that they have there, more or less. So I don't know. I think that in the Pacific League, it's more or less set. I think that, that maybe there'll be a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a disadvantage for Lotte having to play the better teams down the stretch. Of course, you know, maybe SoftBank will be resting their best guys, and maybe Nippon Ham even will too. So I don't think it'll be that big of a factor. In the Central League, I think it's, you know, it's, you have four teams competing for the top spot and the top three playoff spots. I think it's really about as even as you're going to find. The big advantage that I see is that Hiroshima has more games to play, I think, than anybody else among the top contenders. They have, no, it's not that big. They have 18 games to play.
18 now, yeah.
Yeah, the Giants have 15. Yakult has 17, and Hanshin has 16. So I think it's not so much a strength of schedule, but, you know, with those five games, I think that Hiroshima has left with Hanshin. I think they have three or four with Yakult.
They have four.
And then, you know, they have a chance to help themselves but also hurt the competition. But, you know, even if, like, let's say Hiroshima beats Yakult three out of four, then they're going to be helping themselves, but they're also going to be helping Hanshin and the Giants.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really anyone's game. It just kind of comes down to who gets hot. So no, I don't really think it's going to make a huge impact either way. What do you think?
Well, I briefly mentioned the schedule in a blog post that I wrote, I think it was earlier last week. And, you know, it looks like a huge impact on paper, but I really don't describe or subscribe to the notion that games are going to be easy because a team isn't or is perceived to be a tough opponent. I think you got all kinds of dynamics going on at the end of the year. One of them is something that Tuffy Rhodes mentioned long ago. And he says, look, you don't want to finish last, okay? Whatever you can do to finish out of last place, do it. So you got teams that are fighting, two of them. In the Central League, you got the Dragons and the Bay Stars. And in the Pacific League, you've got the Buffaloes and the Eagles. And neither one of those teams wants to finish in last place. So they're going to be desperate. And you might even have an outgoing manager with the Eagles. He's already said he's leaving. So we really haven't heard official word, but I guess officially he's leaving. So you got all kinds of dynamics going on. With the Hawks, I think you might be able to catch a break in that they're not going to be playing their best guys, but even their B guys can beat you. So it's not an easy situation, but it's certainly better than having to face their A guys. So I think you're actually going to get a break playing the Hawks, because their magic number is down to four. So I think they might clinch sometime in the next couple of days, and then they might be title drunk and not really paying attention for a couple of weeks, but their B guys are going to be playing hard. You know, the Marines, I said it earlier, as long as they're on the field with a chance to play a game, then they have a chance to make up some ground. And I think that's going to carry them to at least being able to do what they've been doing all season, which is compete and win games. In the Central League, just like you talked about, we've seen no team has had the ability to pull away from another team. They're all equal opportunity losers. They're all equal opportunity winners. They win on the road. They win at home. They lose on the road. They lose at home. I don't think the schedule is going to be the determining factor. I think if some team can figure out the perfect rotation, and of course you've got the rain makeup days, you've got days off in between, you've got time where you can mix and match your pitching matchups and scramble, as they like to call it, the scramble mode in Japan, where you know, you get guys ready. We saw guys get taken off the mound in the second inning or early in games, two different games today. And I think, you know, like you said, these guys are going to be playing each other. Everybody has a chance to do some damage, and everybody has a chance to help themselves and hurt somebody else or help a different team by winning. So I just think if somebody gets hot, they're going to win. And if you make a lot of mistakes, you're going to be out. And that's going to be it. But I don't think it's the schedule. And I don't, you know, maybe in the States where a lot of teams are playing out the string. And even then you have young kids who are coming up. And you have it here too a little bit. You got guys who are trying to win jobs and make a good impression for next year. I don't think anybody's giving away games even at this point. And I know Dave Okubo isn't going to be giving away any games. And guys want to get off the field as soon as they can. They don't want to be giving up runs. So I don't subscribe to that notion. I think it's going to be tough all over, and I expect all the teams to compete, and it's going to be really tough.
Yeah, September baseball. It's the best time of the year.
All right. Our next question is from @GraveyardBall, and it's another MP3. God, I love these things, man. This is awesome. All right, let's take a listen.
Hiroshi Murawaki and Dave Okubo are not returning to the Oryx Buffaloes and Rakuten Eagles as managers in 2016. Who are some candidates and names that could be replacing them for next season, be hired in their place?
All right, thanks again, guys. We appreciate it. That's a good question, too. You're the guest on the show this week. Why don't you take this one as well?
All right. So I guess I'll start with sort of my thought process on how I answer this question. So MPB teams tend to follow a couple of different patterns when choosing a manager. So a lot of teams just go for an established player with the team for many years, like Hanshin with Wada and Okada and Mayumi before him. You know, then the other thing is they could choose the head coach, the so-called head coach, or the manager from the Nigun team and promote that individual.
Seen that happen a lot.
Yeah, Fukura is an example. Then you know, we don't see this as much lately, but bringing in an experienced manager who's managed for different teams, and Rakuten has done this with Hoshino recently, and they had Marty Brown, and you know, you see Ogawa with the Yakult from before. Then there's a more recent trend of hiring a guy from outside of coaching, you know, maybe a player or a media person, you know, a player with media experience like Kudo or Nakahata, Kuriyama, yeah, giving a guy like that his first chance in coaching as a manager. And then the last one, we haven't seen this recently, but hiring a Gaijin foreigner manager like Bobby Valentine or Trey Hillman or someone like that. So those are kind of the different options that I see teams pursuing. I don't think I've left any out. But, you know, Rakuten and Oryx are probably going to take different paths. Rakuten has traditionally hired from outside the organization and gone with you know, they've had their best success when going with experienced managers like Nomura, Hoshino, Brown. You know, they had Yasushi Tao early in their history, and that was a disaster. And Okubo is...
Well, it wasn't his fault.
Well, no. I don't think he really was up for it, but...
Well, he didn't have any players either. We don't know. Well, okay, I'm sorry to interrupt.
And that's that's the interesting thing. We don't know. It's almost impossible to evaluate a manager objectively from outside, you know, outside the organization. We don't know, you know, what his level of commitment was. We don't know, you know, how he worked with the players. We don't know how he treated them. You know, you have better insight than I do because you get to talk to the players and find out what goes on in the clubhouse. But
well, they lied to us, but yeah.
Well, yeah.
That's no help.
Well, I've heard stories, but
Me too.
So anyway, getting back on track, I think that Rakuten goes outside of the organization and hires somebody. I don't really see a lot of candidates with managerial experience that are just sitting idly by that are really inspiring. There's you know, like an Ogawa or somebody like that. There's been some rumors in the newspapers that Tatsunami, the Dragons' longtime third baseman, could be an option. One guy I like and I would like to see get a chance is Atsuya Furuta, Yakult's catcher and former manager. The other name I came up with is Tom O'Malley. Actually, there's two more names, Tom O'Malley and Masumi Kawada. O'Malley is a longtime coach and has expressed a desire to manage in Japan. And actually, if you remember way back when Live Door was trying to start a team that eventually became the Rakuten franchise, O'Malley was their management candidate. So you know, it'd be interesting to see if he is an option. And then Kawada kind of fits in with the Kudo Nakahata mold. And I think one of the things that appealed to DeNA with Nakahata was his background with Yomiuri and that winning culture and trying to bring that to DeNA and sort of his media savvy. I don't know if Kawada is the same kind of personality, but he definitely has the Yomiuri background, and he's played in the majors and has a lot of good experience. So those are my options for Rakuten.
Okay, well, for me, it's the options to replace Okubo. I had the same, actually, some of the same names on my list. Kazuyoshi Tatsunami was one of them, and he was a longtime dragon, and I think he leads NPB all-time in doubles. Masayuki Kakefu. And I talked to him at a press conference about 3 or 4 years ago. Cal Ripken was also there, and I asked them both at the same time. I said, how come you guys haven't gotten into managing? And Kakefu said that he really just hadn't gotten any offers, if you can believe that. And I don't know that I can believe that, but he seems to be a guy who's really impassioned by the game, and he seems to like to teach it and to talk about it. I love listening to him on the radio and on whenever he's doing color commentating on the radio or on TV. He's great to listen to. There's another guy out there, Takahiro Saiki, who used to be with the Bay Stars. He's a farm coach right now, or he's a farm manager for the Dragons in their organization. But I really liked his demeanor as a player. He was never too high, never too low. He was just really calm and cool and collective. And I think he would be a great manager. I think that's a great way to go. There's another guy. I have lots of candidates. I have all kinds of candidates. I don't know why that Japan doesn't give some of these guys, or just drag him onto the field and make him work, even if they don't want to. Remember Manui Otoko, Mr. Bases Loaded, Norihiro Komada? You hear this guy on the radio, the way he talks through at-bats and how he tells people exactly what he thinks the pitcher is thinking and how he's attacking certain batters and certain teams, the way they pitch. It's just wonderful. Kiyoshi Hatsushiba, remember him with the Marines?
Yeah.
Akihiro Yano, a former catcher with the Dragons and the Tigers. He's a great one. I also had Tao on my list thinking that, you know, instead, because I know that, you know, and I reported it last week that I had seen in the newspaper that the Eagles were talking about Seiichi Yoshino and bringing him back. And I'm like, you know, no. But a guy that they really should bring back is Tao. And the reason I said they don't know what kind of manager he is because they didn't have enough talent and they only gave him 1 year. And, you know, I think this is a good manager. I think if you said commitment, we don't know about how much his heart was in it, but we do know that he didn't have a lot of talent, and your heart can only be in it so far when you know you're going to lose every day. So I think So Taguchi was also mentioned. I think Shinya Miyamoto, who the former Yakult Swallows player, was also mentioned. I saw that name out there. I can't see them bringing back Hoshino, and I can't see him accepting, so they're going to have to go down another road, I think, but... That's interesting. All right, Oryx?
Yeah, Oryx, it's interesting you said Taguchi, because he was on my list. Now, my question is Fukura definitely not continuing? Because they have played a bit better under him.
Yeah, I don't think he's the future. I don't think, you know, for me, watching him, I don't think he wants the gig. And then I just think that they need to, we've always talked about this on the show, they need to come up with a plan and try to execute the plan, whatever the game plan is. If we want this kind of manager, let's go out and get a manager who does this, and let's go out and get a manager who does this, and someone who fits into their plan. And I just don't see that Fukuda fits into their plan. But I don't know. I haven't talked to anybody.
Probably not.
The only person I don't know is Alex Ramirez, and he has his own agenda.
Now, he would be an interesting candidate as a manager.
Well, I have him. He's my top candidate.
Yeah, he's I didn't even think of him, but yeah, he's a good choice. And I think he was involved with getting some of those guys signed from his independent league team.
Mm-hmm.
I forget his name, but the guy that Hanshin signed. Yeah, Caraballo, and then the guy that Hanshin signed, Valdez, I think.
Perez?
Perez,
oh,
yeah.
No, there was another guy.
He's an outfielder. He hasn't played past Negron, but yeah, I mean, clearly he's got the charisma, he's got the media savvy, he's obviously had a fantastic baseball career as a player, So he's a good choice. Takeuchi was also on my list. Don't really know how he's been keeping himself busy.
He's on NHK a lot here. He does a baseball, it's mostly Major League highlights show on NHK. But I've seen him at the ballpark, and I've seen him here and there on TV doing some shows. So he's keeping busy, but he certainly should be busier in the game.
Yes. Yeah. So Taguchi and the other guy that I had Saiki on my list because obviously, he's kind of a stately kind of player. You know, kind of I could almost see like a Takuro Ishii becoming a manager at some point. As well. And the other guy that I had was, I'm kind of going in sort of the Mr. Oryx kind of association with his team, and Yoshitomo Tani, who just retired or announced his retirement yesterday.
He announced he's going to retire. That's correct.
Yeah. So who knows if he steps out of the player's batter's box and into the manager role. It's probably a real long shot, but those are my guesses. And my guess is as good as anyone. So what do you think?
Alex Ramirez, I just said he's my top candidate, and he has a foot in the door because he's their roving advisor. And I think it's the perfect time for them to take a chance on the guy like this, because it looks like they're going to finish in last. So that means there's no pressure on him the next year. He can't do any worse than they don't come in with any huge expectations like they came into this season with. He's going to be able to work with the foreign players because he knows them. He's going to be able to work with the Japanese players because he knows a lot about them and can speak enough Japanese. He can work his way through enough Japanese to actually communicate with them in a very non-intimidating style of Japanese, unlike a Japanese manager. So it would be really a refreshing thing to have a manager come up to you and say, "Hey, I want to talk to you for a second if you have a moment,"
I personally am incapable of the more authoritarian kind of speech. That's not my thing.
And rough and gruff kind of language. So I think it's actually perfect. Now, some of the other guys that I mentioned on my list before, I think Taguchi would be a great one. I think Tatsunami would be great because he's from that area originally. He's a PL Gakuen kid, so that would be a good one. And then, again, the guys I mentioned before, all of them, Komada, particularly Komada, he's really impressed me. Another guy, Kataoka.
Atsushi,
Kataoka. I hear him a lot on Pro Yaku News, and I'd like to see him get back out there. So there are a lot of candidates for all these guys. I don't know how much you guys are asking this question. I don't know how many of these guys' names you recognize, but there are a lot of candidates out there. It's just a matter of whether they want to do it or not. I mean, I wouldn't have picked Hiroki Kokubo. I wouldn't have spotted him or thought of him as a guy who would be a leader. And you mentioned Tani, and I just can't see anybody following him. He just doesn't have the personality. But then again, you put him on the bench, he might turn into a real manager, a real leader. So you never know. But you got to give some of these guys a chance.
I thought the same way about Wada. I never would have guessed that Wada would manage a team. But yeah, I don't think either one of them will go outside of Japan. I think both of them will hire a Japanese experienced MPB professional.
Yeah, I think both of these teams are going to go conservative, especially after coming off of bad seasons. I think they're going to look to have as much continuity as they can and keep everything as close to normal, quote unquote normal, as they can and move forward. All right, guys, thanks a lot for listening to the show. A reminder, we are approaching quickly our 200th Japan Baseball Weekly podcast episode. So please send in your favorite moments via Twitter or email to hashtag JBW Memories. This show will be on October 19th, as I have said. Any other questions, send them by email to ykyujohn@gmail.com. Tweet us at hashtag highheat at JBW Podcast. And you can also leave us a note on the Facebook page. Glenn and Graveyard Ball, thank you very much for the questions. NPP Tracker, Patrick Newman, thank you very much for sitting in. We appreciate you getting up real early in the morning and keeping everything quiet in the house. And have a good day.
Thanks for having me. And I'll be happy to be gone next time for Power Tracks.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Enjoy your baseball. One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.